This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Tonight at midnight, there will be fireworks and shouts of Viva Mexico. 16 is Mexico's Independence Day. It's a celebration, of course, here in Texas, but also mainly across the southern border. And this is just another indicator, more evidence of the close ties that the two nations share, in addition to the economic, family, and historic bonds that we have. Sometimes, though, things aren't so friendly between the United States and Mexico. So how are we doing these days under President Biden and then after Trump? If you've got questions or comments about U.S.-Mexico relations, what would you like to see happen? And why do you think this is important to you in San Antonio or businesses, our economy here in San Antonio? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also tweet at us at TPRSource, email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined by Carrie Kahn, NPR international correspondent based in Mexico City. And Carrie, it's great to have you.
Oh, thanks so much. It's great to be on.
Tony Payan is with us, fellow for Mexico Studies and the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Tony Payan, it's good to have you today.
Thank you, David. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Earl Anthony Wayne, a former U.S. ambassador to Mexico, now a public policy fellow and board co-chair for the Mexico Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars and a distinguished diplomat in residence at American University. Ambassador Wayne, looking forward to talking to you.
It's great to be with you, David, and with your colleagues.
So, Ambassador Wayne, how do you see the status of U.S.-Mexico relations right now?
Well, I think both sides are making an effort to work through some of the really challenging issues they face and some of the differences they have. And they just had a big meeting last week where they launched a new forum, the High-Level Economic Dialogue, that's basically aimed at trying to take advantage of some economic opportunities to move forward in this massive relationship that we have.
And Tony Payan, what's on the punch list of things that we got to get fixed?
Well, when it comes to the U.S.-Mexico relationship, you can go down the list and there's probably 10, 20 things. But at the very top of the list, of course, is the border mismanagement that's been going on. The border continues to be closed. That affects a lot of the border economy. That needs to be fixed. Obviously, that follows the pandemic. There's obviously the immigration issue. The United States wants to re-implement the Migration Protection Protocol, which is a kind of a third country agreement for Mexico to keep immigrants in the country. And of course, trade disputes are there as well, and Mexico's own deteriorating security situation, which affects the United States. So you name it, there's plenty on the table.
Carrie Kahn, as a correspondent for NPR in Mexico City, and you're living there, you talk to people in Mexico all the time. What's the attitude like these days? So how do Mexican citizens view the United States?
Oh, that's a huge question.
You got plenty of time.
Okay, if I get the next hour. But Tony really went down the list of a lot of things. The last thing he mentioned, which I think is incredibly on the minds of Mexicans, is the increasing violence situation here in the country. The security situation in many parts of the country is terrible. And you see a lot of Mexicans being internally displaced. Also, I'd say what's on the mind, it's always economics too. And, just as in the United States and throughout the world with as a result of the pandemic, prices, inflation is rising in Mexico too. And, basic goods are more expensive. And that's weighing heavily on people's mind. And I just wanted to add real quick one other thing. You were saying that people are going to be, saying the grito of independence tonight. But as for the second year in a row, the massive celebration that we always have here in Mexico City will be virtual and not full of people and full of, screams.
We're not going to be crowding into the Zócalo.
Yeah, and it's just, I think it just talks about this time right now and that we can't all gather in big numbers you know, it's just going to be a more demure holiday. There's a lot of calls right now for people not to gather. There's a talk about the Ley Seca, where alcohol sales are going to be curtailed from this afternoon on, you know, things like that. So it's a different holiday. It's a different feel in Mexico right now for a lot of reasons.
Ambassador Wayne, good faith goes a long way in trying to repair a damaged relationship. Do you think that President Biden is able to demonstrate right off the bat that he's saying all the right things, but is this coming across as lip service, or does he really want to have an equal relationship based on mutual respect with Mexico?
I think he does. I think he comes to office with the U.S. president that really knows the most about Mexico of any president I remember, and actually invested a lot of time and effort during his time as vice president in working on U.S.-Mexico relations, including chairing a version of this group that was just reestablished last week when he was vice president, and also working on Central America, because as you probably remember, he was asked as vice president to help oversee the work on Central America. So he knows a lot about Mexico, and he's really been pretty patient. His return was not warmly welcomed by the current president of Mexico initially. There was a clear effort to have distance between AMLO and President Biden, but they worked persistently to build that relationship up. And I think the view from the White House is that this is really the most important relationship they have in Latin America because of all the things that Tony was mentioning, because of the border, because of migration, because of the cross-border criminal activity, and because of the $1 million a minute in trade that you mentioned in introducing this segment.
Right. So, and you do see Biden really kind of focusing on the economics of Mexico. It's looking good now. I think it was 6% growth, economic growth they had last year. They're forecasting 4% this year. I think those are the numbers. It's not as good as people would like, but it's better than any place else in Latin America, Ambassador Wayne.
Well, it's better, except when you look at it, still negative between 2 and 2.5% for almost 3 years, because they dropped so much in the previous year. And they did not start off growing in his first year. So he has a lot of economic growth to make up. Poverty has increased and is still higher than it was when he took office. So there's a lot to do. And when he came in, he promised he was going to have a 6% average growth every year during his 6 years in government. So there's a lot to do. So this economics that Kerry was mentioning is still really important. And that combination of health and economics, and then when you put security in there, public security is the number one concern among Mexicans. And though it has not gotten a lot worse in the last 3 years, it has not gotten a lot better. So AMLO has the worst record, the worst 1 year record for homicide, and
right. Ambassador, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll pick up on those points that you were making. We're talking about Mexico and our relationship with Mexico and why it is important that this is a healthy relationship. Do you have family in Mexico? Do you have business ties in Mexico? How are things going? We certainly want to hear from you. What are some of the obstacles that you see that can be removed that can improve trade and diplomatic relationships and mutual respect between the United States and Mexico? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about Mexico. You know, that big country just south of San Antonio. You go about 150 miles south of San Antonio. You cross over the Rio Grande, and Mexico was there. A big, beautiful, incredible, intriguing, just a beautiful country. Wish I could spend more time there, not just on the beach, but in the interior, and discovering the fantastic people and culture, history of Mexico. And it is a country that sometimes hasn't always gotten the respect that it deserves from the United States government. And under Donald Trump, we could wonder about what happened there. I've got a question or comment we want to hear from you. The number is 833. 833-877-8255. So Kerry Conn, under Donald Trump, when he was saying he was building the wall, Mexico was going to pay for it. He said he was going to cut off trade with Mexico if they didn't put in the Remain in Mexico policy as a safe country for immigrants, migrants. How did Mexico react to how that was they were being treated? It must have seen that as tremendously disrespectful, which is important in Mexico. And is it easy to come back from that?
For the United States, you're asking?
Yeah.
Or for Mexico? Well, it was interesting because at the time, you know, López Obrador really did allow for these policies to come into effect and for, as you said, Mexico to become a de facto third safe country for other nationalities to be deported here or to be kept in Mexico as they waited out their asylum processes. So, and it appears that that is still the policy, even though Trump is not in power anymore, a lot of critics say that the López Obrador administration is still doing the United States, they say, dirty work in holding back migrants from getting to the northern border. We've seen in just the recent weeks, you know, large groups of migrants in southern Mexico trying to get north to the northern border, right alongside with the United States. And it's we've also seen the López Obrador administration deploy large numbers of troops, National Guard soldiers, and immigration agents to detain and to block the passage so that people, migrants, and these are mostly Haitian migrants, Cuban migrants, from not leaving that southern state of Chiapas. And we've seen some just terrible video footage and news reports of what it's like holding back these migrants down in the southern part of Mexico. There have been incidents that human rights groups say have been brutal and arresting lots of people with children. It's just, it's kind of, it's just been interesting to see that even though Trump is no longer in office, no longer making those threats, that the López Obrador administration is still using this heavy hand on migrants here, in, especially in the southern part of the country.
And Tony Payan, it does seem like that Biden's strategy is to strengthen Mexico's economy. So not we really haven't seen a lot of migration from Mexico into the United States like we had in the past. But if Mexico does have more jobs and opportunity there, is he hoping that the migrants will remain in Mexico on their own accord?
Well, you know, this is a very complicated situation, and I don't necessarily think that the Biden administration has fully developed a comprehensive policy towards Mexico. There are too many issues, and the Biden administration is distracted with dealing with the pandemic and, of course, getting the U.S. economy restarted, the bills that are still pending on Capitol Hill, and a number of cultural and political issues that are still going on in the United States. So he's got a full plate. I don't think that there is yet a team that is fully and thoroughly engaged in Mexico. We hope that that will change with the designation of Ambassador Salazar, Ken Salazar, who just got to Mexico City this week. And perhaps then we'll see a clear policy towards Mexico emerge. But having said that, two things that I think your audience has to keep in mind. Number one is Mexico is perhaps the one country, and you said it in the beginning of the show, the one country that affects the lives of millions of Americans in a very direct way for a number of reasons, from drug trafficking to immigration to trade to the services trade. Obviously, many, many Americans go in there to tourism. Americans living in Mexico, it's a very complicated, you know, multi-layered relationship. But the other thing that we cannot underestimate is the really how bad the López Obrador administration has turned out to be. And the environment towards investors in Mexico is really awful. From the cancellation of the airport early on 3 years ago, all the way to retrenching into a more state-led economic sector, which directly affects Texas and Houston, by the way. I think we see a very hostile environment. The trade that's going on, I think, has its own inertia because there is an agreement behind it. But there's obviously emerging trade disputes. So I think it's going to be a very rough 3 years, and the Biden administration needs yet to get its act together. But I don't think that under the Lopez Obrador administration, things are going to get any better. The basic understanding that emerged between the two countries in 1990-91 through about 2015 for about 25 years of a North American platform with a Mexico integrated into North America with an economic integration and increasing order and collaboration on many different issues is gone. Trump completely undid that. And to rebuild that is going to take real vision and leadership, and I don't yet see it there.
So the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, it got sidelined, and now we have the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA, that framework. And we were told that that was going to be NAFTA, but better. Ambassador Wayne, is that not what we ended up with?
Well, I think it's a very solid agreement. It's not as there were a number of things in it, let's say, that I would rather see not there, but it's not bad. It maintains the core of NAFTA, and it creates a number of different processes and groups that can actually make things better if they get working together well and constructively. Tony is correct. There are a number of things that the current administration in Mexico has done that have undermined investor confidence and aren't taking full advantage of the real opportunity Mexico has to attract investment with all the interest in nearshoring and shortening supply chain lines. So there's a lot that can possibly be done if the governments can start working together constructively and with the private sector and with all those stakeholders from Texas and other places to hear from them and hear what they think needs to be fixed along the border and in that cross-border trade that is so important for both countries.
I've never read so much about supply chains as I have had over the past year. It's become a really hot issue. You see a lot of talking about supply chains and strengthening them with Mexico and how that could be a key for United States manufacturing recovery. Is that really the roadmap that both countries are really pursuing, Ambassador?
Well, that's what they've just agreed. They've just set up a working group last week that's supposed to identify some initial supply chains to start to look at in more depth, and hopefully we'll talk to the private sector. But the one they're talking about right now is semiconductors. And as you know, there's been a big shortage of semiconductors in many different industries in the United States and around the world, really. And so they're going to look to see, is there a way that Mexico can increase some of the production that will help in providing supply chains in the future, and it will be right nearby, won't be over in East Asia, which is where most of the production is going on right now. And so that's really part of the work for the weeks and months ahead, is to see if they can do that. And then they're going to look at some other sectors like medical devices and pharmaceuticals to see what can be done there. But it can be done quickly, but it is needed to really understand what the supply chains are and how can you strengthen them and make them more resilient in case there are future crises.
Kerry Conn, there was a recent ruling by the Mexican Supreme Court that decriminalized abortion. This came just as Texas put in place one of the strictest anti-abortion laws in the U.S. I know these things probably weren't related, but people saw them as they were. How is this decriminalization of abortion rule being received in Mexico, and what does it mean for people in Texas who may want to go to Mexico for a safe legal abortion?
Oh, that's a big question, and we'll have to see. This was a Supreme Court ruling that was coming through the court, so it wasn't from, it had nothing to do with the Texas. It was coincidence that the timing was that way. And there's a lot of legal issues that need to be cleared up on it, especially as it deals with individual states that have passed their own strict anti-abortion laws. If you think Texas is strict, you know, there's some states here in the Bible Belt of Mexico that are very very strict on abortions, even in the case of rape or incest. So we'll have to see how the courts play that out. But it was an important ruling. And we're already seeing in some instances, states are trying to push back. But I'm not a legal expert. I can't say how, you know, federal versus state rule will work out. But there will be challenges to it for sure. And there'll also be grassroots challenges. I always say that I've never seen such a huge number of people come out for a protest as I did a few years ago for a pro-life, anti-gay marriage protest in Mexico City. You know, we don't hear a lot about it, but this is a very dominant Catholic country where abortion is not supported. Abortion rights are not supported by the majority of people. So it is legal already, you know, passed by laws in certain areas of the country, especially in Mexico City and the state of Oaxaca, and I believe one other state. But, if you want to see grassroots movement that's not about security, not about the economy, it's about abortion and abortion rights. And so clearly we've not heard the end of this. But I did want to, if I could come back and say something about what you all were talking about. I don't want to be the one on this conversation that's going to be pro Lopez Obrador, but I do think it's important to get his point of view in this discussion. I'm saying this as just an information provider, not as a supporter, of course. But, he has his own vision for this country, and it is quite interesting, and it needs to be looked at quite carefully, especially when it comes to trade. Tony was correct that the business investment climate here is not good for foreign investment. Lopez Obrador is turned inward. He wants a state-run economy. He sort of looks back on the glory days of the 80s when Pemex, the national oil industry, was the economic engine of this country. But he also has made pledges to the poor here that he does not believe that free trade, while he did sign this new USMCA agreement and push forward for it, that the poor has benefited from this. And so he sort of talks both sides of the story. He has increased the minimum wage here, I think three times or twice, which affects businesses and upsets businesses. And he's also working through a bill to outlaw outsourcing, where companies can pay somebody doing the same job in a factory because they're hired by a third party. He wants to abolish that. So he says there are policies that in what he calls the neoliberal economic model that are not benefiting Mexicans here. And that's his motivation, and his base is the poor and those that are not doing well under the whatever 30 some years of NAFTA and free trade, liberalization economy here. So just we need to keep that in mind too.
Right. And to just quickly follow up, because I want to highlight this one particular point that you make, because, the headline consumption of news in the U.S., like, oh, Mexico decriminalized abortion, and that was a big change. As a matter of fact, that's just probably just one small part of a longer story, and we really haven't gotten there yet. Who knows what actually is going to develop in Mexico, but it's interesting to point out that Mexico is having its own particular culture wars, and we're seeing that there's a lot of people looking to defend and bolster women's rights, and also trying to do something about violence against women in Mexico. And that's something we've seen people take to the streets as well. So we're taking a break. We're going to continue our conversation. We're doing a roundtable discussion about the status of Mexico and U.S. relationship. What do you want to know, and what have you experienced? And we know that San Antonio has many, many deep ties with Mexico historically and now today with our business community. What can we do to make sure that the gears of commerce run smoothly? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Mexico, Mexico's economy, its connections to San Antonio and the United States. What's our relationship? What's the state of our relationship with Mexico right now, coming out of Donald Trump and with under Joe Biden? If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Ambassador Wayne, Earl Anthony Wayne, former U.S. Ambassador to Mexico. I want to follow up on what Kerry was talking about under Manuel López Obrador, and he wants to chart Kerry, and help me if I get this wrong. He doesn't like Mexico being so integrated into the United States economy because it does put Mexico at a disadvantage, a negotiating disadvantage. Particularly, we saw that under Donald Trump, and he would like to be able to have more independence and find ways of doing that. And that seems like a smart thing to do if you're looking out for the best interest of your country. But then again, there are a lot of benefits of being integrated economically with the United States.
Objects to integration. I think he sort of wants both, and maybe Ambassador Wayne can help me out there, but it sounds like he wants both because he wants the economy to be more state run and to have more state more dependent on the state systems that he controls. But he also knows he can't reverse this long wave of integration of the country. And there are benefits and jobs, especially in the northern part. He just wants that to be more spread out and the benefits to go to more people.
All right. And so, Ambassador Wayne, your thoughts?
Sure. Kerry's exactly right. The benefits from NAFTA really affected the north of Mexico and the center of Mexico and didn't touch large swaths of the south that are still very poor. He wants to change that. And he does think that the previous governments were too oriented toward favoring the middle and the upper middle and the wealthiest Mexicans and not what he sees as his base, which are the poorer Mexicans. He doesn't want to give up the relationship with the United States, but he does want to bring about some changes. And one of those is to have a larger role for the state in the economy, and especially in the energy sector, where he wants the two state enterprises, the oil company Pemex and the electricity authority, known as the CFE in English, to have more influence and control over that. And, of course, that's important for industry being competitive because it affects the price of energy and the efficiency of energy going forward. And so that affects a number of investors from the United States and Canada and Europe who had moved into these energy sectors. And so that's where you get into some of the tensions that we have bubbling up in the trade agreement going forward. But there are some areas of agreement also with the Biden administration. The Biden administration has a big focus on labor rights. AMLO had introduced major labor reforms to give unions, make workers freer to choose the union they want going forward. And so there's some overlap there. And as we know, the Biden administration talks about having a labor-centric trade policy, which would certainly fit with AMLO's orientation. So there are some points of difference, but there are some common points, and that's why this effort is really interesting that's been taking place now to see if they can't find some commonality to work forward toward the future to bring about some changes in this economic relationship that will bring mutual benefits. It's going to be a tough task, but there's some possibilities out there.
Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have a question or comment about Mexico, its politics, its economy, what's happening on the border, love to hear from you. And we have Michael on the line. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to kind of follow up a little bit on the comment that was made a few minutes ago about the ramping up of development in the north and so on. I saw an article in The Economist, I believe it was The Economist a little bit ago, a few months ago, and also in El Financiero, they were a similar article where they were talking about areas where there are more workers needed in the maquiladoras, like Saltillo is an example that was used, and then the state of Yucatan, like in Mérida, or in that Progreso-Mérida corridor that they're kind of developing more maquilas there. And the suggestion was that maybe some of the Central American refugees would be happier working there than trying to, you know, come across the border and all the hassles that that involves. I just wondered what the panel thinks about that possibility. How would that play politically in Mexico if there were Central American refugees that started taking, you know, getting trained for and taking maquiladora jobs?
Michael, thank you for that question. Tony Payan, a fellow for Mexico Studies and the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. What do you think?
Yeah, let me address that issue in a broader context. I think it's an intriguing idea, but I don't think that Mr. López Obrador is as friendly to migrants as most people would think. I mean, Kerry just described to us some of the video footage that's coming out in which there's abuse, outright human rights abuses, and physical abuse and psychological abuse of all these migrants, and of course discrimination, because people get treated differently. Haitians who are of African descent are treated worse than indigenous migrants from Central America. And then of course mestizo Mexicans who are migrating from Michoacan to the border because they're being displaced by organized crime. Then of course white people and foreigners who are in the resorts and being treated very differently. So there is gradations of treatment, and I think the López Obrador is enabling this kind of treatment. But let me go back to an issue that I want to put on the table, because I think it's important. Kerry mentioned that, you know, López Obrador has a vision, and of course his rhetoric I think has been directed towards the neglect of the poor. But one thing, it's politics. One thing, it's to talk, which he does quite well. And a different thing is to actually do public policy that benefits the poorest. And the results are not there. He has essentially dismantled the healthcare system in Mexico. It's starving, and there, you know, I guess the insurance for the poor system that had been established almost 20 years ago, he completely dismantled that, and now 16 more million Mexicans have absolutely no access. Who are they? The poorest. And of course, he also has created an environment in which there's hardly any investment. And who are the most affected? The poor. In outsourcing, some of the people are being let go because people don't want to take on the additional workers in their payrolls directly. And of course, inflation has skyrocketed, and inflation affects the poor. So a lot of his policies are really affecting the poor. And this is why Mexico has now more poor people, and it has more unemployed and more informally employed. So one thing I think it's to, you know, acknowledge his rhetoric, and a very different thing is to examine his policies, which are affecting everybody. I don't think that Mexico is willing to take on any additional immigrants. Mexico's immigration policy today is essentially limited to being outsourced, delegated the American immigration policy of stemming undocumented immigration in Mexico, which is essentially a trans-migrant country. And I don't think that López Obrador is willing to give these migrants any opportunity to stay in Mexico. He promised working permits. He promised the ability of the ability for them to apply to stay in Mexico, and there is no such paperwork being processed at the INAMI. So I don't think that that's going to happen right now. The president is really off on public policy.
Kerry Khan, of the healthcare system in Mexico being gutted, we were told by Tony Payan, what's happening with that with the pandemic?
Right. I just wanted, if I could, I don't want to be the defender of López Obrador on this program, but I when you're talking about the increase in poverty and the poor here, there's a worldwide pandemic. And so there's some things that are out of his control and some parts of the economy that are out of his control. But I totally agree with Tony that there is a conflicting immigration policy here. It's just a both sides, but there have Mexico too. You got to give them credit. They have increased their refugee and asylum process as more Central Americans have come into there, and the numbers are greater. The problem is that as López Obrador does with all of the government institutions, minus the state electricity and energy sector, the state-run energy sector, his whole modus operandi is austerity. And he has cut the budgets of these government agencies repeatedly so that INAME, which is the National Immigration Institute, which holds the refugee and migrant asylum process government agency under that, their budget has not grown as this demand and the surge of migrants from Central America, Haiti, Cuba, Venezuela have come through Mexico. So we've seen this count. I don't know. It's just such a complicated rhetoric that he says that Mexico is open, and we have seen numbers of migrant refugees and asylum processes grow, but then also he's cut those budgets that help out those migrants. And to speak to your caller too about whether these Central American migrants can work in the maquiladoras, they can. Once they receive refugee status in Mexico, they get work permits. It's just that the budgets of those agencies have been cut, the process is very slow. The United Nations has stepped in to try and help facilitate those process, but it is still slow, and the numbers are greater of migrants than there are, you know, the bureaucrats to push that through. So it is very complicated.
Taking a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Mexico. If you have a question, a comment about the status of U.S.-Mexico relationship, what should be done? We're hearing, you know, from the candidates running for Texas governor that we need to get tough with Mexico. We need to cut off trade with Mexico until we get them to capitulate to our will. Why that's what that could do to that relationship. And what do you want to see happen? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. You can join our conversation about Mexico by calling 833-TPR-TALK. Ambassador Wayne, we have candidates running for the Republican nomination for Texas governor. We have the incumbent Greg Abbott. He is spending billions of dollars to shore up Texas security along the southern border, which of course is a federal responsibility. But we have challengers. One of them is former Texas Senator Don Huffines and the former chairman of the Texas Republican Party, Alan West. Both those guys are saying we need to cut off all trade with Mexico until Mexico stops the flow of undocumented people from coming across the border. What do you think people should make of that sort of rhetoric?
Well, I think they should reflect on the fact that the largest trading partner of Texas is Mexico, and that Texas and Mexico have a larger trading relationship than all of our trade with Germany and with others. So this is a massive relationship that accounts for millions of jobs. And I think they should focus on economics. Now, there are things Mexico can do to improve its management of the migration problem. As Kerry was saying, they have not funded their refugee or their migration agencies effectively. And this isn't new, but it's gotten worse under AMLO because he's taken a response to the COVID crisis was really to cut back all other spending. There really does need to be an effective U.S.-Mexico response to this migration problem, which is not due to either of those countries, but is due to problems in Central America and elsewhere, and people are on the move. And this isn't true, as you know, just in North America. It's true in other parts of the world, too. So it's a big problem. It's going to take a long time and serious investment. And yes, Mexico can get better, but so can the United States. If we had migration reform, if we had more effective asylum processes at our own border, we could be doing things a lot more effectively also with letting justified people in and turning others around. So there's good blame to go in both directions here, both sides of the border.
Mexico's debt to GDP ratio has increased from 44.9% in 2018 to 54.7% in 2020. People are seeing a debt problem in Mexico, also with Pemex. It has got $110 billion outstanding financial debt. Tony Payan, is that a concern for Mexico's future economic stability?
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the things about President López Obrador, with all the credit that can be given to him. And on that score, I agree with Kerry on kind of putting the spotlight on certain issues of neoliberalism and the neglect of the poor and all those kinds of things. His policies just don't add up to that real concern, or at least to, you know, to the ability to deal with those issues. And I think on the question of energy and the debt and such, we can see that the president is quite mendacious. That's really a harsh word, but it is. He says quite openly in his morning press conferences that he has not increased the national debt, and yet there it is, 10 percentage points. He says that his government is being very disciplined, and yet we see acting against corruption, and yet we see nepotism, and we see entire families of his collaborators working in government and taking advantage of contracts and such, and we see that he selectively applies the justice system against his political rivals, and then he forgives people who are on his side and such. And so the president is really not the right kind of leader for Mexico to really transcend those kinds of issues. And going into the energy sector, it's very concerning that the president believes that it is up to the state to ensure that Mexico has the right energy mix for its future. In fact, we've seen already under the López Obrador administration several blackouts, regional, several states-wide blackouts on electricity. We've also seen that he's investing in refining in ways that really most countries are getting over. For example, I'll give you the very quick instance on automobiles. Europe and the United States are trying to move into electric cars, and the president is now relying increasingly on hydrocarbons. That's not going to allow Mexico to move into the future of energy. It's not going to allow its manufacturing to move into the new kinds of vehicles that Europe and the United States and Canada will need. And of course, it's going to set Mexico's energy clock back to the 1970s and even not allow Mexico to really fulfill its commitments under climate change. So when it comes to public policy, almost issue after issue, President López Obrador is taking Mexico in the wrong direction. He's well-intentioned. He has shed light on the right issues, but his policies are completely wrong. And I want to say one more thing very quickly about Texas politicians. I think it's absurd. Texas politicians obviously make Mexico, you know, the little whipping boy very easily. It pays off with their base. But at the end of the day, when they get into power, they change their mind. They understand the relationship. Abbott is one example. But they want to eat their cake and have it. They want to exploit Mexico for their political purposes. And yet they also know and understand that Texas depends on its economic relationship with Mexico. So they need to be a little bit more honest in their political stances and their political rhetoric.
Kerry Khan, all these economic problems for Mexico and the president, but also the cartels. We got like a couple of minutes left here. Sorry, I don't have a lot of running room here, but what should we know about what is happening with the cartels in Mexico?
Oh, boy, you ask me these huge questions. I could do a PhD dissertation on that one. It's a difficult time. Cartel violence is just a troubling situation in Mexico. And as Tony and Ambassador Wayne have said, it is foremost on Mexicans' mind. And we've seen internal displacement of whole communities that are just beset by organized crime in the interior of the country, heading to the U.S. border to ask for asylum. It's just a troubling issue. There was just a report, I'll just say quickly, I read a report in a Reforma newspaper, the national newspaper here, looking at drug interdiction by the López Obrador administration, and that seizures of drugs, cocaine, marijuana, and crop eradication is all down under the López Obrador administration. And that was sort of a troubling report to see, you know, whether eradication is the way to, for effective drug policy, that's, you know, another PhD dissertation.
Right. And the appeasement approach doesn't seem to have worked.
Well, yeah, that's the big question, is that he, López Obrador, has taken a very hands-off approach to drug cartels. He has said his policy is hugs, not bullets, and whether that's working or not has to be discussed. And then just lastly, just for Mexico's point of view, the United States is not doing enough to stop the illegal arms trafficking that comes into Mexico. Mexico would not have this problem of drug cartels and violence if it was not armed to the teeth with guns coming from the United States.
I'm going to slip in one caller.
We always have to say that.
Try and get one last caller on this. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. My issue was, a lot of times we pin a lot of immigration issues on Mexico, like, and because like they're Huns at the door. There's some sort of, like, I guess, white anglicized Protestant idea of barbarianism trying to overrun the U.S. as we're some like the Huns of the days of Rome, when it's really our interventionism in Central America, whether it's the Iran-Contra affair, Reagan sending back Salvadorians who caused the creation of MS-13 in San Salvador, and general holdings in the U.S., the holdings in Central America by U.S. companies like Del Monte, sure, and Banana Republic.
I got you, Chris. Thank you for the call. I want to go to Ambassador Wayne for a reaction to that. Mexico remembers. That's one thing you can say. That, I mean, and there's a long history of U.S. involvement in Mexico, not always good. And so when we talk about, we want to treat Mexico as an equal, they love to hear those words, but they also remember the context, Ambassador Wayne.
Well, I think that's right. There is a long history, and we did take over about half of what once was Mexico. But that was history, so we can only go forward from where we are right now. And there was actually, at various times over the past 20 years, we've had very good working relationships, working together to actually deal with these problems, including that migration problem, where certainly our policies have contributed, but so have the local policies along in those countries subsequently. The key to those, to all of these things, I think, eventually, is creating good jobs where people are, so they want to stay where they are. And the other thing to acknowledge is that there are a lot of workers that have provided good support in our economy and are needed by our economy. So there are win-win ways to take this forward if we can sit down and hammer out good solutions and good ways to deal with this. And just let me to take up the thing about crime and organized crime. U.S.-Mexico cooperation on organized crime has become much more difficult in the past several years. And we really need to find a way to get back to working together to address the common threats here by these illegal groups. They're killing tens of thousands of people in Mexico with the violence that supports their activities. And we had a record year last year for overdoses, drug overdose deaths in the United States, the majority of which are being fueled by drugs that pass through Mexico. So there's a real common agenda here, if we can get smart about it, that will help people in both countries. And we really need to focus on that.
Ambassador Wayne, Earl Anthony Wayne, former U.S. ambassador to Mexico, now at the Distinguished Diplomat in Residence at American University. Also with us this afternoon, Tony Payan, fellow for Mexico Studies and director of the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy, and Carrie Kahn, NPR international correspondent based in Mexico City. Always love to hear you on the air, Carrie. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.